This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
A unique mix of world news and queer culture, Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12, on Joy 94.9.
And you're listening to Saturday Magazine with Macca and myself, Tass.
Thank you, Tass. Toby Halligan joins us now. Toby is a comedian and a political commentator, but we're actually going to have a more serious discussion this morning. The events yesterday in Christchurch by an evil, deranged, misguided right-wing fuckwit.
Are you allowed to use the F word, Macca?
Well, I just did. Oh. Who, so far...
The segment's already controversial.
Yeah.
This is Toby, by the way. Sorry.
Who, as of last time I checked, was responsible with others, but himself, for the death of 49 people. And Toby, you're a New Zealander?
Yeah.
And
good morning, Toby.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming into the studio.
Yeah, well, no, thanks for having me. I was born here in Australia, but basically my whole kind of clan is Kiwi. So my uncle actually works about 200 metres away from the mosque where a majority of the people were murdered. And so I've been reaching out to relatives and kind of friends over there over the last day. And I think, you know, unsurprisingly, the whole country's extremely shaken. You know, I think a lot of people were... Kiwi friends I was talking to were talking about, you know, they've been crying for a lot of the night. I think today the suspect, who I'm not going to name, is in court, and Kiwis around the country have been showing up to mosques as kind of a demonstration of solidarity for the Muslim community there. It feels like I've spent quite a lot of time in New Zealand and been back there many times, but because I've kind of mainly grown up in Australia, like New Zealand has this kind of special place in my heart and in my mind as kind of this, you know, almost like long white cloud of, you know, gentleness and kindness and, you know, this place that's more
with
mature.
The world's best prime minister.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jacinda Ardern.
That's got a sense of perspective and a sense of humour. Like, you look at a lot of the great directors that come out of there and the way that, you know, like even the ads for their airlines, you know, I know they're weird things to connect. And so I think it's a real shock when an event like this occurs. This is the worst massacre in New Zealand's history. And the last massacre that came close to this was in 1990, where 13 people were killed down near Dunedin. It's worth saying too that obviously the perpetrator was an Australian, and Christchurch was kind of, I think, picked out of a bag to a degree. In his manifesto, he was contemplating targeting Dunedin, which is where I've got, frankly, even more family, and both my parents were kind of born and raised. So
what was his motivator? Do we know?
Yeah.
You've read his manifesto.
I have, yeah, yeah. Basically, it is... So I think there's a few things to say. Firstly, a lot of it is founded on kind of misguided, semi-maniacal prejudices about the white race being replaced, and it taps into a lot of classic white supremacist tropes that are idiotic, but that it's worth acknowledging are a number of mainstream politicians, or at the very least senators in Australia, have also tapped into. People
who,
like,
we will not name.
Yeah, absolutely, we won't name them, but it's worth saying, I think, that John Howard deserves some credit, because in 1996, after Port Arthur, he did a couple of things in that year. The first was he changed Australia's gun laws after Port Arthur. In New Zealand, it is easier to get semi-automatic weapons than it is to get here, and that's not to put it on New Zealand or their gun laws, but one of the reasons
That's going to change.
That is going to change. Ardern is going to change those laws.
Yeah, she said that this morning.
But the other thing Howard did was he ostracised One Nation. He shut them down, and he wouldn't preference them. And this generation of Liberals and Conservatives have not done that. Mm. And so the reason why the senator we're not going to name is partly in the Parliament is partly because
of LNP preferences, because all the leaders of the LNP left their balls at the door.
Yeah, absolutely. And so the other stuff he talks...
Or perhaps, Macca...
Never had it.
Or perhaps they are likely to be aligned with some of the values that are espoused by this group.
Scott Morrison made, you know, said ostensibly the right things in response to yesterday, but it's worth noting that in 2011, he, as part of the Shadow Cabinet, openly raised the idea of using anti-Muslim sentiments within the community as a campaigning tool. And this stuff has consequences. And in the manifesto, you see those kinds of ideas writ large, effectively. So he takes the germ of ideas that kind of more mainstream figures talk about, they inflame, and then takes them to extreme levels. And, you know, a lot of it's based on these just kind of fantasies that, you know, white people are being replaced, that we're being invaded, there are references to historical garbage, etc. Like, I don't want to go into too much detail, but one thing that's worth pulling out is that he specifically says that his aim is to sow fear and to encourage reprisals in response to this. And so I think it is a really good thing that Jacinda Ardern is the leader of New Zealand right now, because she has the sophistication and the soft touch and the policy depth to navigate what is a really complicated situation, you know? Whereas Donald Trump, when he called to provide condolences, apparently refused to acknowledge that white nationalism's a growing problem in the United States. Even though, if you want to talk about the prevalence of terrorist attacks, white nationalists are responsible for far more terrorist attacks and deaths from terrorism in the USA.
Toby, I hate to admit this and interrupt you, but in fact, Donald Trump's gone a step further. If you think about the most recent shooting that happened in a synagogue in New York, his reaction to that was, get more security.
Yeah.
I mean, that's in fact inflaming the situation. Rather than trying to water it down, it's actually inflaming the situation.
Absolutely. So I think having Jacinda Ardern at the helm is a good thing. I mean, you never want an event like this to occur, obviously. But you know, the kind of leaders you want are leaders like her. And I think she spoke for...
Impressive speech.
Wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, not a speech. Impressive, compassionate words... that said to me, you know, the way she delivered it, the words were so powerful and, you know, didn't just draw a line in the sand. You know, how she used, you know, we're not a safe haven for this, you know, and that's the reason we're attacked.
Yeah, absolutely.
And New Zealand, you know, is very like Australia, but it's very different to Australia. And I've been to New Zealand a number of times. And I am always fascinated. It's one of the few places in the world where the people match the beauty of the landscape.
Yeah, I agree.
It's quite unusual. And, you know, being a small country, but, you know, think about politically, New Zealand has been a pace setter in many ways, whether it was nuclear-free ships, you know, the way that they treat refugees, and her recognition yesterday that, you know, the people who were murdered, a lot of them, came to New Zealand by choice because it was a safe place. And, you know, that safety's been breached.
I think she's just remarkable. She expresses the values that I think, you know, we should be living by. They're about inclusion, they're about equality, they're about acceptance, they're about kindness. And she uses that language in the way in which she frames things. But she also was very clear that there is no tolerance for the sorts of attitudes that underpinned the incident yesterday.
But you know what we need to have no tolerance for? We need to say to our security agencies, you know, the people involved in this were apparently not on watch lists. Our security agencies, and this is going to impact all of us, need to pay more attention to the far right. Okay, other forms of terrorism are an ever-present threat, but we, you know, our security agencies need to pay more attention to the far right, because it's the far right that is the most likely to perpetrate these sort of attacks.
Oh, absolutely. And I don't think
enough attention is being paid. Sure, you know, numbskulls like Blair Cottrell get a bit of attention, but don't forget they have hundreds, if not thousands, of followers, and every single one of those is capable, in the right circumstances for them, of doing this sort of thing. And we need to keep an eye on this. This is not anti-democratic. This is actually pro-democratic.
No, I think that's right. And I think there is also a responsibility amongst media to think about how these kinds of stories are reported on. I know a number of media agencies showed sections of the footage, read out sections and quoted extensively from the manifesto. So, I mean, this is not kind of breaking news particularly, but this is from a report that has not been released publicly. Like, I've been writing about a report that was conducted on the far right in Victoria recently, and what that report that consisted of kind of detailed analysis of Facebook posts and the social media presence of a whole variety of far-right groups found is that there's a direct correlation between the popularity of those groups and media coverage, and that those groups online parrot certain kinds of terms like African gangs, you know, in quotation marks that get used.
Toby, I mean, this affects us here very personally. Paul's just let me know that the guy that runs the milk bar just down the street here lost, here on Burke Street actually, in the middle of the city, lost his uncle and a nephew aged five. God.
Wow.
You know, so it's just in our own neighbourhood.
See, these are the kinds of warriors that the far right has working for them.
That's
people
right.
who kill five-year-olds.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, what garbage.
Toby, what are the lessons from this and where to from here? I mean, you know, what should we be thinking? What should we be planning to do?
Well, I think one thing that, like, the big takeaway for me, and that was another takeaway from this report that I've been reading through, it's about Muslims today, right? But these groups, far-right groups, their agenda is not just about Islam. They oppose migration of all sorts. Mm. They oppose multiculturalism. They loathe the LGBTI community. So in this analysis of all these Facebook groups, they found that a period where they were most active was during the equality campaign, spreading transphobia and homophobia. And I know that we're all standing in solidarity today with the Muslim community, but this isn't actually just an attack on the Muslim community. It's an attack
on all of us.
Absolutely. And it's an attack on this form of society that we live in, a form of society.
Diversity.
Absolutely. Where a variety of groups are able to get together and there are differences and there are arguments, but we work out ways to live civilly. And if you elect leaders, if you elect politicians who use division and court hatred for political purposes,
this is what you'll get.
Yes. There will be marginal people within the community who hear those messages and who take it one, two, three steps further, and that leads to people dying. So people like Scott Morrison, people like Peter Dutton, who've courted anti-Muslim hatred and hatred of other groups. I'm not going to tell anyone how to vote at the next federal election, but you should not vote for political parties that treat this stuff as a game. It's not a game. Mm. People die. People get murdered.
It's a deadly game.
Yes.
You know, the only prize is...
Toby, they're very powerful words. I actually feel quite moved by what you've said because it resonates very clearly with how I feel about this situation, how I feel about the sort of the politics of fear. You know, if you listen to Hugh McKay or read his books, he actually talks about exactly this very issue and the way in which political parties have actually, in a sense, exploited anxiety. Mm-hmm. The anxiety that people experience around fear.
And, you know, that fear can even be about something as completely different as a living wage.
Yeah.
You know, the government saying, oh, well, look, you know, let's translate it. If you're going to pay people a living wage, other people are going to lose their jobs. Well, reality is, why is it acceptable to have people in this country working a full week and having to live in poverty? It's just not acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
And how can you make that a political argument?
You can't.
You know, how can you make it a political argument? You know, are we going to reopen Christmas Island because the boats are coming?
Mm.
Boats aren't coming. Mm. You know.
And spend billions of dollars doing it as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Billions of dollars that could be going to, say, rural communities that have been left behind by globalisation.
Yeah.
Macca and Toby, we've had a message from one of our listeners, the wonderful 317, who's one of our regular listeners, who talks about a contribution that Waleed Alid made on the project. There. I know I didn't see this. Did you
have
any chance? What's your reflections on that?
Well, Waleed, kind of during this piece, and I worked with Waleed for a long time at the project, and know Waleed quite well, and he's, I think, one of Australia's most sophisticated thinkers and also communicators. He talked about the fact that he was not like he was shocked but not surprised, effectively. Like he was actually not that, you know, like this has been coming for a long time. There have been these patterns that exist and these divisions have been courted and inflamed by sections of our polity and politicians for political purposes. He referenced the senator who shall not be named. He references Scott Morrison's remarks. He also talked about the fact that he knows what the people in that mosque were about to do and how it's a place for contemplation and the psychological space they were going to be in. I think you were talking about some stuff that we need to do as a community. I think over the last 15, 16, 17 years, as a community, we have allowed rhetoric and portrayals of Muslims as terrorists or as anti-women or as all these other kinds of things to go unchallenged often. Not because we necessarily agree with them, but because it seemed exhausting to push back. That's how I found it sometimes. But we need to push back against that stuff. My partner and I just got married, just to tell a quick little personal story. And we were meant to be on a honeymoon, then we had to postpone it for various reasons. And we were going to Jordan and Lebanon. And most of the people we said that to said, oh, Jordan and Lebanon for a gay couple. And we were like, yeah, like Jordan and Lebanon aren't Saudi Arabia. Mm. Do you know what I mean? The Muslim world has 1.4 billion people in it. Beirut is a gay capital. Mm. We were looking forward to going there and, to be honest, walking around sections of Beirut and feeling much more comfortable as a publicly gay couple than we would in sections of Melbourne. Mm. There are a lot of Muslims around the world. Yes, there are some sections of that community that have violent tendencies. But as we learned yesterday, there are clearly sections of the Anglo-Saxon community. Yes. This bloke boasted of his Irish-Scottish ancestry. Well, I'm Irish and Scottish. So as a moderate Irish Scotsman, I'd like to condemn this extremist. You know, that's what we do. That's what the right-wing media does when terrorist attacks occur. They call on moderate Muslims to kind of condemn it.
Yeah.
Like, I think leaders within our community need to acknowledge that white supremacy is a problem within our community, and they need to push back against it.
Toby, we're right behind you. Thank you for your time this morning. Thank you for coming into the studio.
Thank you.
Congratulations on your wedding. I didn't know about that. may you live happily ever after.
Thank you very much. Yeah, absolutely. I think we will. We've got a greyhound, so we're very happy.
Keep up the good fight.
Thank you.
And let's keep the conversations going.
Right. Thank you very much.
Hi, this is John Borghetti, the CEO of Virgin Australia. Just like Joy 94.9, we are flying high and proud.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.